Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. This is the Cryptoconomy Podcast. Welcome back, Cryptoconomy crew. We are hitting part two of Hugo Noyan's series on the fundamental building blocks of Bitcoin here today. If you did not listen to part one yesterday, it's a short one, but it's a really good one. And I would definitely check that one out. And if you did not drop applause yesterday on his article, take the opportunity to now to go check it out and give it a round of applause. I really, really enjoyed this little article series. Don't forget to check him out on Twitter. So today we will be hitting part two. This is probably a week old and some change by the time this gets to you. I've been prepping for the leave out of the country, and I have been reading and recording nonstop for about 2 days now, in between the many errands and things to get sorted before we leave for Switzerland. But I'm getting to the end of the tunnel here, and I hope you guys enjoy this one a lot. I'll probably still do a lot of commentary, but I'm getting a little bit tired, so I might cut it short here at the end. We will see. But let's go ahead and jump into Hugo Noyan's Bitcoin, Chance, and Randomness. Randomness forms the cornerstone of Bitcoin's proof of work. But how did we get here? A brief history of the study of randomness. Randomness has always been an essential part of life. Many ancient divination rituals were based on chance. The tossing of astragali, animal knuckle bones by the Greeks, cow sim sticks by the Chinese, opeli chain by West Africans. The use of dice-like devices in games and gambling also goes back thousands of years. Yet it was not until the 16th century that we started gaining the necessary tools and languages to really understand chance and randomness. Those tools include arithmetic concepts such as fractions and the number zero. Our study of chance and randomness began in earnest with a man named Gerolamo Cardano. Born in Italy in 1501, Cardano was a polymath and one of the most influential mathematicians of the Renaissance. He was also a notorious gambling addict. Due to his gambling problem, Cardano eventually sunk into abject poverty and obscurity. It was his experience with gambling, however, that led him to write the Book on Games of Chance, the first systematic treatment of chance and randomness. Interestingly, Cardano intended to keep the book secret to himself. The Book on Games of Chance was published a century after it was written, long after Cardano's death. Cardano's main contribution to our understanding of chance and randomness was the idea of sample space. At the most basic level, calculating the probability of an event involves the simple task of counting the number of scenarios that could lead to said event, then divide that by the total number of all possible scenarios, the sample space, assuming all scenarios are equally likely. This assumption only holds true for problems like dice rolling, but it was a good start. Following in Cardano's footsteps was Galileo and Pascal. Galileo was the perfect embodiment of the rebellious intellectual spirit of that era, going against the powerful Catholic Church and proclaiming that the Earth is not the center of the universe. Galileo produced many important works. One not very well known work, Thoughts About Dice Games, explored similar topics that interested Cardano. Pascal, a contemporary of Fermat and Descartes, went a lot further than Cardano and Galileo did. He discovered what we now call the Pascal's Triangle, Although mathematicians in other civilizations, for example Iran, China, and India, had discovered the same triangle centuries before Pascal did, Pascal's work was the most comprehensive and added novel applications, specifically in the area of probability theory. Pascal also introduced the Pascal's wager and the concept of mathematical expectation. From the seed that Cardano, Galileo, and Pascal planted, our understanding of chance and randomness gradually grew, over time becoming more sophisticated and refined. This was a common theme of the Renaissance. A few fundamental breakthroughs, such as astrology, Newtonian physics, calculus, empiricism, laid the scientific foundation that brought forth new branches of knowledge and major technological innovations, which eventually led to the Industrial Revolution. A list of notable milestones in our journey of cracking chance and randomness. Sample space. Permutations and combinations. Pascal's triangle. Law of large numbers. Law of small numbers. Bayes' theorem, conditional probability. The bell curve and standard deviations. Regression toward the mean. Random walk. Monte Carlo simulation. And pseudo-randomness. Two major developments stand out: Monte Carlo simulation and pseudo-randomness, particularly because they're highly relevant in today's world. The invention of the computer opened the door to a brand new application of randomness, computer simulation. For the first time in history, we have a way of, quote, predicting the future or uncovering hidden truths by cheaply performing experiments over and over again. The large number of simulations afforded to us by the machines was previously unthinkable. The invention of Monte Carlo simulation in the early 20th century marked a major turning point in human history. Prior to the Renaissance, humans often lived in fear of randomness, of uncertainty. Leading up to the 20th century, we slowly improved to gaining a better understanding of it, but still largely let randomness dictate the flow of things. With Monte Carlo simulation, we started making randomness work for us. The apprentice has become the master. Notable early pioneers of Monte Carlo simulation included John von Neumann and Alan Turing, the two godfathers of the modern computer. Nowadays, Monte Carlo simulation has a large number of applications: fluid mechanics, business, finance, artificial intelligence, to name a few. The recent case of AlphaGo is the perfect example of how Monte Carlo simulation, combined with other techniques, can guide us to new discoveries. AlphaGo outplayed the best human players with moves that completely surpassed our imagination and the rich literature of Go. AlphaGo challenges the idea that machines cannot be creative and forces us to rethink what creativity really means. The rising popularity of Monte Carlo methods was what spurred the development of pseudo-randomness. A pseudo-random process is a process that appears to be random, but it's not, because a good simulation needs to be able to closely mirror the random nature of reality. Numbers generated by such a process are deterministic, but they pass statistical tests of what is considered random. Pseudo-randomness, in turn, became one of the building blocks of a brand new field, also a child of the computer age: modern cryptography. Which brings us to Bitcoin. The role of randomness in Bitcoin. One of the major innovations in Bitcoin is the use of proof of work in establishing distributed consensus. Proof of work provides an objective yardstick which Bitcoin network participants can rely on to come to consensus without trusting anyone on the network. This is unlike schemes like proof of stake, which relies on a subjective interpretation of consensus. This section assumes proof of work is the only secure way to implement a blockchain. For a refresher on proof of work, read part 1, The Anatomy of Proof of Work. The work in proof of work involves searching for a hash output that has a minimum number of leading zeros. There are some constraints on the hash input, such as formatting, timestamp, etc. Bitcoin proof of work scheme uses a cryptographic hash function called SHA-256. An important feature of cryptographic hash functions is that they are one-way, meaning that it is infeasible to deduce the hash input just by looking at the hash output. And the reason they are one-way is largely due to how random the hash output is. This turns out to be extremely critical because if the hash function doesn't generate sufficiently random or pseudo-random output, one can start with the desired output, i.e. a string with a certain number of leading zeros, and work backward from there. This would render the proof less trustworthy at best and useless at worst. In simple terms, what a typical proof-of-work scheme does is A. It poses a problem whose solution lives in an incredibly large space. B. There is no shortcut. And C. The only way to arrive at the solution is by brute forcing and randomly searching the large space. Much like searching for a needle in a gigantic haystack. The official computer science term for this is unbounded probabilistic iterative procedure. Quite a mouthful. So the randomness of the hash function determines how strong the proof is. Hashing provides randomness, and randomness backs proof of work. Quote, a good puzzle gives every miner the chance of winning the next puzzle solution in proportion to the amount of hash power they contribute. Imagine throwing a dart at a board randomly with different sized targets corresponding to the mining power held by different miners. End quote. Arvind Narayanan. There is no formal proof that randomness is a mandatory requirement for proof of work, but empirically this seems to be true. There's also the simple observation that any problem whose solution is non-random tends to require as much effort to verify as to compute the solution in the first place. Any such scheme would be seriously constrained in terms of scalability. Keep in mind, Bitcoin is incredibly hard to scale as is. It would also disproportionately favor the fastest miner, to the point where slightly slower miners earn nothing. Another benefit of randomness-based proof-of-work is that mining membership is highly open. Miners can come and go whenever they like. It doesn't matter if they join immediately after a block has been found or 5 minutes after. Their chance of earning the next reward doesn't change. What about hashing? Is it the only way to get randomness? Probably not. There are other known ways to simulate the process of random search besides hashing, such as integer factorization or discrete logarithm. So it's highly likely that hashing is not the only means to achieve randomness. While randomness is a necessary precondition for creating digital proof of work. Proof of work schemes fall into two major categories. Compute bound, where the random search is bound by processor speed, and memory bound, where the random search is bound by memory accesses. It remains to be seen whether one proof-of-work category is materially better than the other. I personally think memory-bound is worse, but the underlying mechanism is the same. A probabilistic, random search in a huge solution space, and any solution, can be verified cheaply. In summary, for as long as humans have existed, we have struggled with randomness and uncertainty. The invention of the modern computer and Monte Carlo simulation in the 20th century allowed us for the first time to turn randomness to our advantage. The use of randomness in Bitcoin marked another milestone in this long journey. Randomness, in short, is what backs the proof in proof of work. Without randomness, or really good pseudo-randomness, proof of work would not work. If Bitcoin succeeds in being money of the future, it would represent our most significant and largest scale application of randomness thus far. All right, and that will finish the two-part series, or at least I think it's two-part. I'm not sure if he's got another one in, that he considers in this series. If he does write another, I will definitely be eager to jump into it. This one was, let's see, what does he got over here? Okay, so this one was on August 25th. So he may have a part three in this series. He doesn't specifically say that this closes it out, and this is the most recent thing that he has published. So that'll be exciting to see if he has another one come out. I would love to read it. He also put in the notes, for a detailed history of randomness, check out The Drunkard's Walk, How Randomness Rules Our Lives by Leonard Mlodinow. Not sure how to say that name, but I actually just bought that audiobook earlier today or yesterday sometime in preparation for my very, very long time on planes and sitting in airports for the next 2 days. And I'm actually really excited to dig into that one. But I thought this one was really cool, I really want to explore this topic further. I hope he does write another piece so I can really kind of dig into this. But I want to read that book on randomness first. And for now, we will just go ahead and close this one here. If you liked this article, do not forget to go drop some applause on both part one and part two. That's on Hugo Nguyen's Medium page. And of course, I will tag him in the post and link to his Twitter so you can check him out up there. Definitely follow him. I am sure he's going to have some more good stuff in the future, not to be missed. Okay, and also follow me at The Crypto Economy, Twitter, Mastodon. I'm on something else, Medium. Check me out on Medium. And you can also check out the website. It's, like I say, it's in beta. Right now, there's still a lot of work to be done on it, but check it out. Feel free to post on any of the episodes if you have comments, questions, anything like that, or make a mention of something if you want me to specifically grab some work or article that you think is really good or that you'd like to hear me discuss on the show. Send it my way. Let me know. You can find me on cryptoeconomy.life or at thecryptoeconomy@pm.me. So you can just hit me up on the email there. But yeah, definitely send me suggestions if you guys have got some stuff you want me to dig into. That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm doing this for. I love to dig into this. Also, if you would like to support the show, first subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you don't miss any of the show. That would be a travesty. But if you would like to support the show, donate to my Bitcoin address. I will have it available in both the post and on the website there. And as well, you can always leave me a review. That's a huge way to help the show, and share it with your friends in the crypto economy space or anybody who's interested in getting in Bitcoin and crypto in general. Sharing it out there and letting other people know that they can listen to a ton. I mean, we're at 150 something now of articles and topics and discussions read of Bitcoin available in audio to people, free to grab and search through and listen to any specific topic they want. I'm really excited to get this all organized on the website, which is a goal, so that people can have, they can easily sort through all of these ideas and learn them piece by piece. So if you are enjoying the show and you feel like you're getting value out of it, and other people would as well, definitely share that around. Leave me a review. That's a huge, huge help. And thank you so much to anyone who has. And of course, also to anyone who has donated to the show, a huge, huge thank you for keeping my coffee cup full over here. And that'll do us for today. Thank you so much for listening, guys. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. I will catch you all tomorrow. Later.